Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Well, hello, I am Dr. Jake Porter, and I am so excited to be here with you for Betrayal Recovery Radio. If you're new to the show, I just want to let you in on the fact that this is my first time to host the show as its new host. I did a transition show with Carol, the coach, the former host of the show, and she graciously built up this podcast and gave it the following that it has today. And I feel so honored to be stepping in to that role now and look forward to getting to know you as an audience and you getting to know me. In case you don't know me, I am Jake Porter. I'm the founder and president of Daring Ventures Counseling, Coaching, and Consultation in Houston, Texas. I'm a licensed professional counselor, a certified sex addiction therapist, a certified clinical partner specialist through APSATS, and I work with couples doing intensives, disclosures, grief intensives, and all sorts of stuff. But I have a passion for this work. I have a passion to see those who've experienced chronic betrayal, those who have been part of committing chronic betrayal, move into a place of healing and restoration and even growth. So I've got great plans for us and this show together. I want to thank APSATS. Listen, if you don't know about APSATS, APSATS is the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. And it is a nonprofit organization that does a great job advocating for those who've experienced betrayal. And also training, providing quality training for those who want to care for and walk this journey with those who are recovering from betrayal trauma. And so if you don't know about APSATS, go to the website, APSATS, that's APSATS.org, and see what they've got going on. Just a couple of things that I do want to mention that APSATS has happening right now. At the end of this month, Carol Jurgensen Sheets, Carol the coach, and I will be teaching her ERCOM model. That is the Early Recovery Couples Empathy Model, a training for clinicians, coaches, religious leaders. It's a four-day training that starts on March the 28th. It's going to be held via Zoom. And this is a fabulous, practical, down-to-earth training to help you help couples get started in the healing of their relationship through the experience of empathy. Lots of practical tools and exercises that you're going to be able to take straight from that training into helping people work on their relationships. You can go to APSATS.org to check that out. I also want to mention that in June will be the next round of APSATS sort of foundational training in the multidimensional partner trauma model, and also their betrayal trauma religious leader training in June as well. One other resource I want to let you know about that I'm putting on is it's a free online summit. It'll be a three-day summit happening the last weekend of March. It is the Choose Connection Summit, primarily geared for couples in recovery. And if you go to ChooseConnectionSummit.com, you can claim your free ticket to that. It's all online. I think we're up to like 25 speakers now, lots of great information. And so I'm grateful that we're able to offer that to you as a free resource. Now, let me talk to you about what we're doing today for this episode. I'm super excited about it. there's a lot happening in the world right now, particularly around awareness of the experience of betrayal trauma. And as the concept of betrayal trauma is getting more and more well known, the areas of life in which this conversation is taking place is expanding. And one area that it is has expanded into recently is into the faith community, not just the Christian faith, also the Jewish faith, the Muslim faith, and many other faith traditions. There are individuals who have learned from good APSATS trained providers about the experience of betrayal trauma, and they have then taken that message back to their faith leaders. And they've also recognized in the process that sometimes the messages that they received from their faith communities were at best less than helpful. And sometimes, we have to admit, even abusive. Well, one of my really dear friends, Stacy Sadler, is really passionate about this. She wants to see change happen in faith communities, but she wants to equip people to advocate for that change in ways that are actually effective and actually in line with folks' own values. So rather than coming from a place of hurt and wounding where people might speak in ways that they end up regretting or ways that might prevent them from being heard, she wants to help those who've been betrayed work through their own process so that they can find their voice and advocate for change within their own faith communities. Stacy is a licensed professional counselor here in the Houston area. Her own story is one of healing as she's experienced betrayal and being the partner of an addict. And so it's from this place that her counseling career was born. She is a certified EMDR therapist. She's a certified clinical partner specialist through APSATS. And she does a lot of work with women who've been betrayed, with couples. She travels around the country with New Life Ministries, facilitating weekend groups on healing from sexual betrayal and trauma and marital intimacy. And she's got a new book that is going to be coming out later this year on single parenting. You're going to really enjoy getting to know Stacy in this conversation that we're having about spiritual trauma and carrying the message of betrayal trauma and the needs around that into our faith communities. She's even going to talk about a new project that she's launching to help you find your voice and learn how to be an advocate for change right there in your own faith community. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation with my good friend, Stacy Sadler. Welcome, Stacy. You are above all of that, my friend, and I am honored to have you here today.
Oh, I'm honored to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Jake.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm excited. This is my first show as the host since the transition show with Carol, and it's great to be on here with you. And what we're going to talk about today is actually something you and I have talked about offline many times, and that's this idea of spiritual trauma that so many people encounter from their faith communities when they're seeking help.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and I think you can't work with people like you and I do for very long without running into this, bumping into this. I bump into it weekly in my practice.
Yeah.
I see people all of a sudden just go, oh, my church. And then the story falls out and
that's right.
Their faces glaze over. And it's tragic to see it happen. And I hear it every single week.
Yes. Yeah. So just yesterday, I was with a group of professionals and several of them made the claim, no helping professional would ever say to a betrayed partner that they had a role in their husband's or their partner's addictive behaviors, sexual behaviors. And I just, my jaw dropped. Like they were serious. That would never happen that a counselor or a pastor would say that. Right? That's what I did.
Really?
Yesterday.
We hear it all the time.
That's what I said.
We hear it all the time.
So many people come in. They've got these stories about what their father, you know, they're well-meaning, probably, right?
Yes.
Pastor, church leader, small group leader, Sunday school teacher said. Yeah.
Sure, because the message has been sent out there that if you don't meet your husband's needs, he's going to go elsewhere. If you don't keep your man happy, he's going to go elsewhere. Right. I mean, that message gets sent among others, many others.
It does. And it's important, I think, the way you're phrasing that, and this is what I said to the group yesterday. Someone may not look a woman in the eye and say, this is your fault. But there's a whole lot of other things that are said that when you add them all up, that's the sum total of the message. You had a part to play in this.
Right. And sometimes it's a subtle message that comes when someone's telling their story about, you know, how often they have sex or what it means to satisfy a husband. And so it may not be said directly to someone, but it might just be said in an offhanded way. And the people in the congregation or reading the book or whatever material it comes by are sitting there going, something's wrong with me. It's my fault. You know, it immediately goes to, it's my fault, or I should do something different to change this and to keep this kind of thing from happening, which you and I know is not true.
Right. So before we get too far ahead on this, let's back up and let's just try to get some definitions established. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even tell you we were going to try to do this, but let's try to come up with a definition of spiritual trauma. Like what is that we're talking about for these folks who've experienced betrayal?
Well, I think that spiritual trauma is the result of spiritual abuse. Mm. And that sounds like a big old heavy word, but a religious abuse. And I don't think that spiritual abusers or religious abusers necessarily mean to do it or know that they're doing it. But it is using, I think people who are in a place of position, maybe like an author or a pastor or a Bible study leader, are put on pedestals, and what they say, they have to realize how their listeners are hearing it. And so I think spiritual abuse happens when, because of that power imbalance or that power differential, when you're not recognizing what could be in the audience, sometimes you can say things that are damaging to the hearer.
Right.
Again, not necessarily meaning to, and out of ignorance for the things that can go on in marriage, like if we're talking about infidelity or addiction of some sort. Now, I know that's not a definition, but I think that's the essence of it. When we use scripture or principles to keep people in abusive situations and maybe make marriage higher than the individual. That's one aspect of it anyway.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
What would you add to that?
Well, I'm not going to add to it, but I want to sort of unfold part of what you said there that I think is so important. And that's the position that someone holds, right? There's there's an authority that comes with the position. Scripture says, you know, not many of you should be teachers, right? It warns, you know, because of the responsibility that comes with that. And I think, and this is true whether you're in the Christian faith, you know, Jewish faith, Muslim faith, when you're a religious leader and you speak, your words are going to carry an authority, whether you like it or not, by those who are following you, right? Who are hearing
Absolutely.
Your teaching. And as someone who was a pastor for 13 years, I remember times when someone would come up to me and say, well, you said this. And I'm like, maybe I did, but good grief. I don't, you know, it was all, it was off the cuff, but they didn't hear it that way.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And so go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and the humility that comes with your answer at that point, you know, if a pastor goes, I never said that, or, you know, you took that wrong, or if, you know, a leader of some sort says that, we're going to do damage. You know, you and I know both know you can repair if you're humble.
Absolutely.
And that's hard. You have to have humility to be able to hear those kinds of things.
Right. Right. So let's just kind of play out a scenario here. A woman discovers that her husband has been unfaithful. Maybe it's, you know, just chronic porn use. Maybe it's that she's discovered a series of affairs. Whatever it is, the content of the betrayal is less important than the experience of discovering it. We know that.
Sure.
That knowing that there's an alternative reality that's been out there is so damaging. So they go to the person that they count on to care for them and shepherd them, right? They go to the pastors. Mm-hmm. And the pastors are on the front lines. I know you and I both don't have a heart to beat up pastors or Christian leaders here, but they go, they walk into the office. What are some of the things that you've heard women say that they've heard in those offices?
Well, specifically in that situation, you know, there have been, are you satisfying him? What's your sex life like? You know, immediate questioning about what your sex life is like.
Yeah.
Or, well, we'll get him in a support group in the church. We'll get him in a men's accountability group in the church. That really...
Okay, explain to people that smirk on your face when you say that.
Isn't really designed to deal with a deep sexual addiction.
Right.
And, of course, when someone's discovering that their husband's, like you said, doesn't matter what the content is, we never know what the whole big picture is. That's why we do disclosures, right? So if a pastor's just, his answer is just to send him to a men's accountability group, it's only as good as the accountability. You know,
and
so
right.
I asked a man the other day, I said, did your accountability group know, after he failed the polygraph, I said, did your accountability partner know, that your group know that you were still having an affair with this woman, you're still carrying on with her? And he said, no, they never asked.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and so if there isn't, you know, so sometimes those groups, as good as they are for a lot of other things.
Right.
Someone with a deep sexual integrity issue or a sex addiction, it's just like scratching the surface.
Right. That's a whole different animal.
Right. And so sometimes they see our sweet ladies as our partners as hysterical, you know, and you need to calm down and you're just off the rails. But you and I know that traumatized women or men betrayed can act really crazy because they've been gaslit made to think they're crazy. And one of my biggest things, and I just happen to have it right here because I thought we might be talking about this, is I was handed a brochure on anger by my care minister when I told her what I was going through. And I, you know, the answer was, Stacy, you can do something about your anger. So in that case, she's looking at the speck in my eye when there was this log of a problem. And, you know, just keep doing better. You just keep, you know, doing your piece. And you add that to biblical truths like winning them over without a word, you know, from 1 Peter 3:1, you know, and things like turning the other cheek in Matthew 5. And so I'm going to go home with this message of, I don't have a voice. I shouldn't use it. I should not speak out truth. And like, I just need to go away and let God deal with this problem. And what happens is the problem doesn't get solved.
Right. I mean, it's like we forget that anger is a valid emotion that has a purpose, right?
Absolutely.
There's a purpose.
Yeah.
In it. Yeah. Can it lead to danger, to excess, to unhealthy places? Of course. And I know you work with women on that all the time. But anger in and of itself has a point to it. It's to protect something. Yeah,
we just did the restore. We get the restore weekend this weekend, and one of the problems is we hear is that we send women home angry. Well, they're not angry; they're empowered. And we totally talked about the difference between being angry and being empowered. But when they come home setting boundaries and saying, hey, I want you to do this and this and this for me to feel safe, all of a sudden these guys are like, oh, what do I do? I've got this angry woman on my hands. No, she's just empowered and she's not going to put up with it anymore.
That's right.
So it's a really important part of recovery.
And, you know, my experience in working with couples is that when the person with the addiction really engages in recovery and really works the process, you know, and goes through the growth that comes from it, there's a point when they look at their betrayed partners and they say, thank you for setting those boundaries early on. Thank you
yes.
for setting the expectations. And they see it wasn't selfish. It wasn't out of anger. It wasn't a lack of forgiveness. There's another one that gets heard a lot in churches. It was about protecting
yes.
the relationship.
That's so true. And that's, to me, one of the impacts of spiritual abuse is that it allows the abuser to stay in the sinning situation, if we want to put it in church terms. And, you know, I think about, like, this behavior is not worthy of the Sadler name or the Porter name. Like,
right.
when you start looking at it that way, you go, oh, it's my job to call it out, not wink
yeah.
at sin. Because
yeah.
the impact is we're just allowing people to stay in a place that's unhealthy for a whole entire family a lot of times.
Right. It's not good for anybody. Nobody's winning in that situation.
Nobody's winning. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they get asked about their sex life. They get told he needs to go to a men's accountability group in the church. And then I just mentioned one. Well, you brought up anger. You know, deal with your anger. Here's the pamphlet.
Yeah, yeah.
And then forgiveness. You know, it's time. You have to forgive him.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's really funny because I speak on forgiveness at Restore as well. And my little paragraph was this big. And I just kept feeling this ick about talking about it as early in the program as we wanted to, because I knew that there were going to be women there who had just walked in after discovery. And yet I'm going to get up there and talk about forgiveness. And so I really struggled with this forgiveness topic, because I think the way that forgiveness happens is it happens too fast before we felt any of the emotions that we need to feel to heal. If
right.
we put the forgiveness cap on it and we haven't felt angry, sad, shocked, disappointed, betrayed, all the things, we're not going to heal. And we know that forgiveness is a process. We know that there's different levels and layers of it, but the church really quick just says, turn the other cheek, forgive, let it go, let God deal with him. And
yeah.
it's tragic, because that is so missing the boat on so many of the essential elements of healing.
That's right. Yeah. So let's keep going with that. What are some of those essential elements?
Oh, well, you know, feeling and dealing and healing. I mean, you know, just
right.
looking at what has really happened, getting to the truth. I mean, we
getting
know that.
To the truth,
getting,
right. How do I forgive something when I don't even know what happened?
When I don't know what I'm forgiving. Yeah.
How do I
so,
even do that?
Obviously, yeah. that's the first thing is get truth, you know, and get safe, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And then start to feel the feelings about what is real in your life. And processing the feelings of betrayal.
Right.
And then healing the relationship, of course. and moving forward in life and dealing with, you know, of course, later on in recovery, this is what I thought you were going to say a minute ago. So many people say, I'm thankful that this happened to me because
right.
I really worked on my own stuff. And we would never tell somebody walking into this, the partner day one, you know,
right.
you need to work on your own stuff, but it leads them to work on their own family of origin issues
sure.
later in the line and down the line. And it's truly amazing that they come out going, I feel so whole now.
Right.
And that's when I get all the feels myself, is when they can be thankful for what happened to them. But if you're listening and you're in day one or day 20 or day 1 year,
right.
don't even listen to what I just said.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Right. That's that post-traumatic growth. It's out there. Google it. You know, I know Carol's done
yeah.
episodes on it. You can listen to past episodes. It's out there,
yes.
but you don't have to, You don't have to push yourself there. It happens as a result of walking day by day through what's right in front of you, as you make your way through this journey. So, yeah. So back to the spiritual part of this, we know, and the multidimensional partner trauma model talks about this, that the betrayal, the experience of betrayal trauma, it's not limited to, my partner and me, the damage, the wounding there. It's not just my partner and me. It's also my partner's friends who knew, or the family who knew and didn't tell me. And what if the men's group at church did know this was going on for years? And
absolutely,
they just kept praying for him, praying for him, praying for him. Now they've betrayed. And then that gets put on God as well. God, how could you? Why would you let this happen?
Why did you let it go on for so long? Why did you not let me know?
Right. Yeah.
And so the first step to dealing with that is to feel it. It's to identify it. It's to go through and ask, what did you hear? From who? Did it come from your family of origin? Did it come from an organization? Did it come from a book? Did it come from a Bible study? Did it come from a podcast? Did it come from a sermon? Where did you hear it?
Mm.
And what did you feel? Feeling all the feelings that surround it.
Right.
And those are the first steps to start to say, okay, how do I heal from it? Because we know what trauma does to the brain. It just scrambles everything up there. And like you said, it gets attributed to God.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes sense why. I get it. Those are valid questions. But what you're saying is we have to let people face those questions. We have to let people ask them and make space for them.
Yes.
And
yes,
we ought to be doing that in our faith communities as well. And yet so often that's the most dangerous place to raise these questions.
And that's the tragedy of it all, Jake, is I've always had a heart for the church to be a safe place and a place to heal. But what do trauma survivors do when they're misunderstood in their church? They leave. And I'm the first one to help them set a spiritual boundary that says, hey, if there's a sermon on marriage or there's a sermon on, forgiveness, you don't have to go. Not that they need my permission, but sometimes they do need my permission not to go. And I had a lady, who was going to leave her church, and she, good friend, and she had prayed about it for months and months and months and talked to many mentors about it. And we realized that her church was pretty toxic. So when she went to leave her church, her pastor said, by what authority do you have to leave this church?
Wow. That's something.
Yeah. Well, narcissism is a little bit of the problem there. But
yeah. I'm like,
and
yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I love what you just said, though. It kind of flew out really fast. I want to go back to it. Setting a spiritual boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to listen to a sermon on this topic, which let's be clear. It doesn't mean that everything in that sermon is going to be bad or unhealthy or harmful or toxic, but it might be for that person or that couple. Right.
Yes. And it hits in the wrong place just because it's a trigger where they come from.
Sure.
And I say that spiritual boundaries also have to do with friends, well-meaning spiritual friends.
Mm.
Somebody gave me a journal. In the front of the journal, it was, just keep looking to God. Don't look at your husband's faults. Da 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 da. And I still have that journal, in the front of it. And it's like, yeah, just ignore the bad and look at all the good. Well, that was my problem. I was doing that for so many years. So the boundary there is, if you're spiritualizing this problem, that's a way deeper problem. I've got permission to say thank you, but I don't need to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. So there's something else at play right now at this time in our society, in our culture, where more and more folks are waking up to this dynamic, right? We've gone through a generation now. My generation raised in the what was the name of the book? True Love Waits, Movement, and the I Kiss Dating Goodbye,
culture.
The purity culture, mm-hmm. all of that. And it's having, we're now seeing the fruit, a lot of the fruit
yes.
that came from that. And it's opening on a lot of eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is. And you and I have talked a lot about this, Jake. And it's good that it's opening a lot of eyes.
Right.
Because the way we begin to make changes is by having a voice. You know,
yeah.
a decent conversation changes people's minds. So we want to learn how to have that decent conversation. The problem is not everybody's having a decent conversation.
Right.
And I came up with the essential ingredients that I think people needed to be to be able to share this message. And when I looked at the letters and I was kind of creating an acrostic, I just lost my mom, 99-year-old mom, and both mm-hmm. my parents were involved a month or so ago. And both my parents were involved in recovery. And when I looked at the letters, they spelled out my maiden name. You're going to take a sip of coffee
oh,
at the wrong
goodness.
Time.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And my maiden name was Sheps, and it's S-C-H-E-P-S, sanctified, set apart. Like, not everybody's called to send this message, right? Mm. Credible. You've got to be credible. The biggest one is you got to be healed.
Mm. Wow.
Because if you're not healed, you're going to be emotional, overly emotional. You've got to
right.
be educated, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And you've got to be passionate. And passionate's not emotional. And then solid.
Oh
and so
gosh.
That's what I am passionate about is equipping people to do this. To speak of their trauma, but in a healthy way.
So I want to back up a little bit. Like, yeah, I keep doing this. I want to back up.
That's okay.
And let's get clear. You know, so there are a lot of people who have come out. It's like their eyes have been opened. They're realizing this was toxic. This was abusive. Mm-hmm. What I was taught, the books I was reading, some of the sermons I was hearing, the counsel I was given, and they know mm-hmm. it hurt them, and they know it's still happening in their faith communities, and now they're wanting to speak truth to power. And so you're
right.
saying there's a way to do that. There's
yes.
a way to do that that is effective, that still honors your values, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah.
Go ahead.
And I think that when you're unhealed, your trauma speaks louder than your message.
And then it's really easy to discount what you're saying.
Well, sure.
Right? Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean,
yeah.
you know, and I think that, you know, we may not have all the answers, but we've got to have the conversations, but we have to have them in a way that's not a reaction.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, you know, some of these people that are out there have an agenda, but they're not necessarily healed. They're unhealed, uneducated, overly emotional, you know, versus being passionate,
right.
you know, and not solid. And
right.
I'll give you a good example. A pastor's wife called me the other day, and she said, I have a little shelf over here, and it says banned books, and there are post-it notes. I'm looking at it right now. And it's books that I used to subscribe to that now have damaging things in them, okay? So I mentioned something to her husband about having one of those books on his shelf, and so she texted me, and she says, tell me what you don't like about this book. So I grabbed the book. I said, okay, I'll get back with you. I got on the plane. I was going to read the book. Never did. Held it away. And then just because I didn't want to look up the dadgum book and figure it out. And
right.
so she texted me back and she said, hey, can you give me your thoughts on this? And I said, can you call me? And she said, yeah. And I said, look, I truly have not. I've read the book, but I don't remember what in here was bad about it, and I can't tell you specifically. I want to educate myself. I want to go through that book and highlight it, and I want to tell you the sentence that I don't like. I don't want to just have heard it from somebody else that this is a bad book and then slay the book. I got cautioned toward it, but I can't tell you right now what I don't like about it from hearsay. I've got to get educated. What did that take? That took me, which I still haven't done, and I'm honest about that, to book piece by piece, looking at the book going, does this square with what I believe? Rather than just writing the coattails of what everybody else is upset about. And she said, I respect that so much. Thank you, Stacy.
Yeah. And so now whenever you do get to it and you are, you enter that conversation, she's probably going to receive that in a way that, you know, if you just shot off some, you, like you said, emotional response, right, to her, that's more vague in general. But, you know, I understand, I understand why people get caught up in the, noise of these things, because they've been hurt, right? And
for
we know that anger is a physiologically numbing emotion. It feels a whole lot better to be angry than hurt or afraid.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I know that and I see this not just, you know, on Facebook and social media platforms, but the couples in my office, and you see this too, where people go to anger to cover that hurt, that pain. But at the end of the day, and this is the conversation I have with them, does that get you what you want and need?
No.
Does that accomplish your purpose here? And it really doesn't.
Yeah. So here's a concept that I would have taken wrong, or maybe someone would have, a pastor or a Bible study leader would have told me wrong in the past. And it's the concept of meekness.
Mm.
And there's just this fine line. I know.
Oh,
I know.
Meekness.
So, yeah. So I remember the concept of power under control. And I Googled it a while back. And the word that pops up is meekness.
Wow.
Okay, who wants to say they're meek? That's just like mousy meek, right?
That's what I think of as a mouse, yeah.
I know. So like ick, right?
Right.
No, I looked it up. The Greek word for meekness is praus, P-R-A-U-S. And it's the word for a Greek war horse. Strong, empowered. But that war horse is trained to obey at the slightest command.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay, so there's tons of power that I could put out there, but yet, who am I obeying? You know, for me and my belief system, I'm not obeying a harsh taskmaster. I'm obeying the Lord, and
right.
He wants it for my good. So he says, hey, if you have a little self-control, you might be able to even listen to the other side and validate the fact that it's hard for this Bible study leader or pastor to understand, or you may find out a whole lot more if you're able to listen. And so if I can control my reaction and my emotion, I might be able to send a powerful message.
And when I think about that dynamic of controlled power, like gentleness and strength, I think about the founder of AppSats, the first president of AppSats, Barbara Steffen. So shout out to you, Barb. I mean, I've watched her at, you know, the Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health and these major organizations where there are people who opposed her message, and with clarity and strength and humility, she speaks truth to power. And it carries a weight that if it wasn't that combination of characteristics and traits, I don't think it would.
Yeah. Agreed. And we've laughed before about channeling your inner Barb Steffens.
That's right.
If only I could do that. And I'm working toward that, and I'm working toward training people to do that, because I think it's so important if we're going to make a change and keep unity.
Right.
You know, we want to keep unity. We don't want to keep unity at a cost of abuse to other people.
Not unity for the sake of unity. Right.
No, not at all. But if we can keep unity, because I do believe people's hearts want to hear the truth.
Yeah.
Some do, some don't. And the truth is, if we can come in this way, those that don't want to hear it or not able to hear it, we can shake the dust from our feet and say, okay, moving on.
Right. Right. Now, to do that, though, it reminds me of the H in your acronym. You have to be healed.
Yep.
So I mean, this could be a whole episode, but talk more about the healing and then also the education piece. Can you do that?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I think that once I started, I'm starting a nonprofit called Beautiful Outlaws. And the reason this came about is so many women came to my office and we'd start talking about the subject and then we'd both get passionate about it. And they all of a sudden felt like they had an advocate and they were validated and, you know, like those spiritual boundaries. And they were like, Stacy, I'm on your bus. Wherever it's going, I'm doing it. I'm like, what bus? Where's it going? What's happening? I don't know. But this idea of beautiful outlaws started happening. And the reason that I call it beautiful, well, we know our women are beautiful and our men are beautiful. And this does not disclude men.
That's right.
Men. It's part, men have been betrayed too. There's a lot of betrayal, ways of betrayal. You know that Jesus was betrayed and he's pretty beautiful. But anyway, it's an outlaw is someone who is put outside of the protection of the law. Mm. And that, I mean, you know, again, I don't feel like the church is protecting betrayed partners and other people that have been spiritually traumatized, right?
Right.
Some aren't. And that common reasons for outlawry were rebellion or conspiracy.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think that fits. Except I don't want to be rebellious. I want to go against the grain in a gigantic, godly way.
Mm.
And my mission is to enlist, equip, and empower the betrayed to speak their truth of their trauma in love. Not in screaming it, not in overly emotional, but to speak it in love. And so when I started creating this, the very first step is healing. It's got to be healing from the trauma, because that's the way you end up having a healed response and a clear response and a credible response. And so for me, I've created a program where we start recognizing the pain and what's happened in our trauma and our spiritual trauma, where it's come from, and then feeling the feelings surrounding it. And you and I know what's going to happen after we do all that. We're going to be flooded with a lot of hard emotion.
Right.
So learning how to become grounded and learning how to come back to yourself and all that. And then eventually how to have a voice and then how to advocate for change.
Yeah.
So that's the guts of the program.
One last thing before we move on from your acronym, the SOLID. What do you mean when you say SOLID?
Good question.
Yeah. You got to be solid.
Jake, for me, solid is just a feeling that you feel inside yourself.
Hmm.
Once you work through your trauma and you believe in yourself and you believe in your reactions, you know, one of the biggest things trauma does is keep you from trusting yourself. And wow. I think once you start trusting your intuition and your gut, that's what solid means.
That's good. That's really
good.
It's
pretty personal when you made me really think about it. It's
it's a
gift of recovery. It's a gift of recovery.
That's good. And I mean, what I'm imagining is when you get to that place, that sure footing, okay, now I can use my voice and I'm not going to be, you know, mowed over by someone who doesn't receive what I have to say. Because I know I've done the work inside myself. I've got the awareness now and the strength within myself and by my faith to know that what I'm saying is true.
And the biggest thing is I'm not looking for that person to validate me.
Mm. Yeah.
I am looking to share a message that will help others, but I'm not looking for that person to validate me. You know, right. I knew that my care minister was going to be the one walking me through my mother's death, the one that gave me the brochure. So a few months back, I met with her and I just confronted her and told her in a very loving, beautiful outlaw kind of way, hey, this is the impact of this on me. She couldn't get it. I mean, she said she got it, but she said, oh, I still give those brochures out. She says, because anger is something that we all can do for ourselves. That's just one piece of the equation that we can help, and I think it still helps. And just out of that 2 or 3 hour discussion, I just could sense that she still wasn't getting it. I didn't need for her to validate my trauma, that she traumatized me. I just knew I didn't need that between us when I was grieving my mom.
Wow.
And sure enough, it was fine. I needed to do that. But I wanted to educate her because I didn't want her to keep handing out this pamphlet without validation that I had a right to be angry or that people have a right to be angry when they've been wronged.
But, the alternative to that, because you're solid, you were able to have the conversation, didn't have the ending that you wanted, and you were able to walk away and be okay versus, and I've seen betrayed partners go through this. They want people to understand, and rightly so. Yeah. But when they don't get the reception they want, it's like even when they walk away, they're not walking away from the conversation. They're playing it over. You know, they're spinning around. They're coming back to it. They're going to try again. You know, and that's all normal, and it makes sense why, but it's crazy making. Right?
Well, it is. And if you're a recovering people pleaser, like some of us in the house, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's really hard, is to let go of people that can't get the message and don't understand the message.
Right. So which means you also need a community of people who do.
Yeah.
People who do understand.
Yeah.
And so when person A doesn't, and I've given it my all, I can walk away and I can go to my tribe, my safe group of people, and I can say, I tried again. Well,
yes,
you know,
yes.
And they know what it's like. And it sounds like that's what you're trying to create.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
So if people are interested in finding out more about Beautiful Outlaws, what do they do?
They go to beautifuloutlaws.com.
Oh,
and
well, there you go.
And I also have a link on my website, stacysadler.com, but it, there's worksheets that I have on there that just help you get a flavor, just a touch of where my trauma is and what do I need to start to do to heal it. And they can download those free PDFs right off my website. But I'm also going to start a group of women that are going to be the first Beautiful Outlaws.
Oh.
And so I'm going to have 8 women. It's just a beta group where we're going to come in together and figure this out and start to be that healthy validation for each other. You're not crazy. You're a good Christian. Your heart is good. You know, you have a good message to send and create a really safe place to heal and then learn how to be an advocate for change. And so we're going to meet weekly for 8 weeks on a Zoom call. And I'm just really excited about it. It's $100 a week, discount if you pay up front. But I really hope that this creates change. We want the goal to be for the church to become a safe place for people and for people, for less and less of the spiritual trauma to happen. That's the goal.
So people can go to beautifuloutlaws.com. Get the worksheets. They could reach out to you about the group, or is there a place?
Absolutely. There's expressing interest button right there.
Okay.
And
all right.
We can talk about when that's going to be and what we're going to do. Just so excited to do this differently than you and I have seen before, Jake. And, it's funny because when you start talking to people start coming out with their story and saying, how do I talk to this person? And what do I do? And I've sort of felt that way. And so I know there's a need for this.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I love it. Changing the whole dynamic of the conversation in a way that will probably be more effective and more in line with people's values. I love it. Well, Stacy, thank you so much. This is fun.
Yes.
I love the work you do. I appreciate you so much. And I'm
glad that you're on here, Jake.
I'm
honored to be the first debut on on the Betrayal Recovery Radio, and I think you're going to be the most awesome host because you care so much for all sides of this, partners and the sexual, the guys with sexual integrity issues, or the women, and you're gonna knock it out of the park.
Oh, thank you, my friend.
Represent us well.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. You have a good one. Thanks.
You too.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of AppSats. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@appsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.